Hello, welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner. Happy to have you. If it's your first time listening, welcome, a big welcome. Really happy to have you here. If you're a returning listener, we really appreciate it. We are doing our best to find great guests for you, put out some great helpful content, and today is a really special show. So our guest today is Cindy Hawes, and I'll tell you more about Cindy in a minute. She was a dental hygienist for many years. She became a certified holistic health coach, and she's written a book called Over the Lips and Through the Gums, A Holistic Guide to a Healthy Mouth. And this is a topic that I'm really excited to bring to you. Because I'll be honest, like for many years, I think my dental care was just pretty standard. I didn't know much about it. You know, should I have fluoride? Should I not? Was kind of the biggest question in my mind. But then as I started to learn about fertility medicine, I found out how important oral health is to the whole health of the body and how it could actually impede your fertility. And it really made me take note because it wasn't something I had heard before. And then as I started to teach it in my fertility course, women were also pretty surprised to hear it and definitely wanted to know more. So today is the day we get to all learn more. And it's such important information. Our mouth is such a vital part of our whole health. So let's bring on our guest today. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Bridget. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm really psyched to have you. I'm hoping you can just tell a little bit more about your story, you know, how you started into this dental world and how you became a health coach and why you ended up writing this great book.
Okay. Well, I started out always wanting to be a dental hygienist and not actually starting my career until I had my children and they were in school. And as I got busier and busier in my own life, my dietary habits changed out of necessity because of time pressure. And that really intensified once I was in the dental hygiene program trying to get my education. Then as a single working mom, it just seemed like it just was like a snowball rolling downhill. And what I didn't realize was that my own health was suffering as this decline in my own nutrition happened, and a lot of it was convenience and time pressure. So I started out being raised, I'm a senior citizen now, so I had the advantage of being raised by parents who grew up in the Depression, who ate a very healthy diet and had backyard gardens, and went from that and preparing everything to being, you know, the Betty Crocker mom where things came out of boxes and bags. And then as time got even more pressured, it was even more convenience. And it, like I said, my own health started to decline. It was this slow, gradual process that I didn't even realize was happening until it reached a point where I was really, really struggling with my own health. And at that time, I was a working dental hygienist and totally entrenched in Western medicine. Did not believe anything alternative was anything more than old wives' tales and quackery because that's what I had been taught. And I kind of fell into alternative care at a time when Western medicine wasn't able to figure out what was wrong with me. And I knew something wasn't right because I was so extremely fatigued that I could barely carry myself through the day. And it just wasn't natural to be that exhausted all the time and to wake up even more exhausted than you went to bed the night before. And so it was alternative care that started getting me back on my feet and reversing this process. And it started with food allergy testing. And I started eliminating foods that I was being allergic to, which caused me to go back and start cooking my own food again from scratch to eliminate things. And that inadvertently caused me to eliminate a lot of processed foods and a lot of chemicals. My health started to improve. And one of the things I found very frustrating was that because my body didn't work like the textbook perfect Western medicine said it was supposed to, they didn't know what to do with me. And while I was struggling with this on one level with my personal health, I was sitting in the dental office trying to make all of my patients fit that same mold that I had been taught in school. And if they didn't fit the mold, I wasn't aware to think outside the box and expand my thinking to figure out why they didn't fit the mold. I just kept trying to push these square pegs into a round circle, and it just didn't work. So as my own health started to improve doing alternative things, I started incorporating some of that into my practice and found if it was working for me and my whole body, it was working for them and their mouth as well. And it was just a gradual transition. Years later, I ended up, after like a 20-year process of trial and error, trying to find things that would continue to improve my own health, I learned about the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and was quite excited about it. So I enrolled and became a certified health coach. And it was through this process, I sat listening to all these really progressive medical doctors being so excited because they had realized that inflammation preceded disease. And the more internal inflammation we had, the greater the chance of the disease, the more severe the disease. And they said that it's what's killing about 80% of our death rates comes from this internal inflammation. They referred to it as silent inflammation. And I was sitting there going, you didn't know this? It's like, that's how dental hygienists have been trained for 30 years that I know of, that's how we gauge what's going on with the health of the mouth by how much inflammation we can see in the gum tissue. And I thought, how did they not know this? So it was just kind of like an aha moment for me. But the thing that was very interesting is that they had found a dietary component to it, and it was by radically changing the standard American diet, they were improving people's health and walking them back out of these health situations so that they became healthier. And when I started talking to people about this who had actually gone through that process and changed their diet and their lifestyle, one of the things they were saying was when they went to the dental office, they got the best checkups they'd had. And it's like, well, bingo. So they figured out what we knew. And now what I'm trying to do is help the dental profession figure out the rest of the picture, because there's so much that has to do with the diet and it affects their entire body.
Yes, I'm curious, you know, how receptive is your audience? Are you finding some people who are wanting to really add this holistic dietary component to their dental practice?
You know, it's very interesting that by and large, it's kind of there's a resistance out there because it's just like medicine. Medicine is resistant to the change that's happening with these progressive doctors and the alternative care that people are facing. But what I found is that it's the patients who are more receptive than the dental personnel. The dental personnel paid a lot and they studied hard for those educations. This is the way they were taught, and that's what they know to be true. Because that's what they were taught. And they're practicing like I did. They weren't thinking outside the box to question when things didn't fit that ideal, perfect mold, to question why. And what is it we could do differently to improve the situation and tailor it to the unique individual? The reason I wrote the book was because I wrote it for the average person on the street to be able to implement some of these simple dietary and lifestyle changes in a fast, easy way, with the understanding that nobody goes in and jumps in with both feet and does it all. It's a process where you keep adding this, and when that becomes a habit, you add something else, and you just are always improving and looking for one more thing that you can do that's easy to do, and until you eventually get all of these puzzle pieces put together. So it's trying to bring the public into more awareness with the hopes that they would buy the book and take it to their dentist saying, what do you think about this? Because it's change comes from the bottom up rather than the top down. And the dentist and the hygienist, if they haven't had any awareness of this, are very resistant to changing because it isn't what they're taught in schools. And so I'm trying to promote the book in the general public. And then I'm also working with doing continuing education classes for the dental professionals to get them more aware. And the first one that I did was last fall, and it was very interesting that I had so much I wanted to tell them. I thought, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get through this all in time. And I almost didn't because they were such a reactive, interactive group. They all wanted to contribute what they had been experiencing. So I think the time is right for the dental professionals to start embracing this type of change and doing something very similar to what the average person can do, which is to just start adding more things to what they're already doing without trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater and start all over again.
Yeah, I think you brought up a lot of good points there. It's when we're working within a system, it can be hard to see how to edit that system. And yeah, they've invested so much money and they've been taught certain things. But like you said, sometimes the model doesn't work. You're trying to put the square peg in the round hole, and you're like, well, why does this person keep having the same problem? Why are we still treating this type of thing? And there are other options. It's just a matter of how do we get it in. It's a great point about bottom up. I think there's so many people, listening to this podcast and just out, my clients who would love to have a more holistic dental experience, and they're so hard to find.
They are. It is very, very hard. And you pretty much have to go in as your own health advocate. 20 years ago, when I was working in the dental office, I used to just raise my eyebrows when people would come in and say, I don't want my children to have fluoride. And I really had to bite my tongue to not lecture them on the spiel that I had received in school, which is what I believed at the time. But, now I have a much different approach to cavity prevention. Fluoride is a toxin, and we're how many toxins do you really think you need in your body? Is there something that would be a better choice, not only for you physically, but where's all this fluoride going when we get it out into the environment?
You sent me an email about that, I believe. And yeah, where is it all going is a great question. We're going to talk more about that because I'm sure people are really curious on your thoughts about that. But yeah, I've had trouble finding a holistic dentist because there's so few, but I at least demand to have a dentist who lets me have an opinion.
Good for you.
because I went to one pediatric dentist with my son, and they definitely gave me the whole fluoride lecture, and I was just like, I'm not gonna be made to feel like I'm a bad mom because I don't want my son to have this fluoride rinse or whatever they call it. And so I just went to a dentist who was just a little more tolerant.
Yes. Well, that is so important because it's our body. We ultimately have the right to say how we want our body to be treated. And if you have some knowledge about different things and some strong beliefs, then I really encourage you to stand up for it because, I really applaud those mothers who 20 years ago, we're saying, no, don't do the fluoride for my child. So, yeah, I really encourage that these days. And it's not a popular opinion among the dental professionals.
I'm sure people are very curious because even if we're interested, it's still there's not a lot of information out there. But before we get to that little
Yes.
part, I'd love to get a little bit more of the broad perspective. So one thing you mentioned in your book is, as we moved into our modern Western model, all our body systems became, separated into different departments, and we all had specialists. And you said that, that happened with the teeth too, or the mouth. So how did that change affect how we treat the mouth and the health of our mouths?
It impacted our entire body, and the thing that we don't want to lose sight of is the fact that the body is one functioning unit. And whatever you do to one system impacts the rest of it. And the mouth is really tied to the body in so many different ways. And yet modern medicine has a tendency to overlook it. And they're just now starting to realize that the health of the mouth is directly tied to the health of the body. And yet for centuries, since the beginning of time, every civilization had some kind of a healthcare practitioner, and it's Western medicine is really the new kid on the block. And we came in with all this science and diagnostics and knowledge and research to back up what we were doing and the ability to use things like x-rays and look into the teeth and the body and what the I always chuckle about this because they refer to it as the alternative. You know, what the alternative people learned from the beginning of time was to read the body from the outside in, because whatever was going on internally would be reflected in the outward appearance. And the mouth was one of those areas. So if you can see things happening in the mouth, it's a really good indicator that there's something amiss inside as well.
Okay. So we just kind of lost that connection to the other body systems. So first of all, what is the environment in the mouth, and how is it connected to other systems in the body?
Well, the mouth is just teeming with bacteria, and that's one of the things that traditional dentistry has focused on, is how to control the microbes. And one of the things that they do is they've identified this type of microbe causes decay. And it has to do with the acid that the microbe is secreting in the oral environment. And then when they look at the microbes that are in the periodontal pockets, they look at that and say, well, you know, we have to remove these microbes. But the whole environment is supposed to be the same environment as your entire body, which is slightly alkaline. And with our modern diet, we've kicked our internal pH from being slightly alkaline into being slightly acidic. And it makes a huge difference in the oral environment as well as the rest of the body, simply because it allows a different type of microbes to set up housekeeping. And they start to crowd out the ones that are supposed to be there that help support normal body functions. And we live in a very symbiotic relationship with those healthy microbes. So when we've changed the internal pH, we've allowed the pathogenic microbes to come in and set up housekeeping. And then they look into the periodontal pocket and say, oh, well, this is the type of microbe that's here. It's the reason you have the disease is because of that microbe. Well, that microbe was just opportunistic because you gave it the opportunity to find a healthy place to live. And microbes like warm, dark, moist places with a good food supply, which, you know, is the mouth. So the microbes, if you have healthy microbial biome in your mouth, when you swallow, it gets taken on down through the rest of the digestive tract. If you have unhealthy microbes in your mouth, when you swallow, it goes down, but it starts to dispense in other areas. And they found that if you have unhealthy oral conditions, unhealthy microbial populations in the mouth, it can impact pregnancies, it can impact pneumonia, inhalation pneumonia in elderly. It can also impact heart disease and many other things. And they're really starting to understand that cleaning this up is healthy for the rest of the body. So the two of them are very interconnected, because if the body is unhealthy, you're going to have an unhealthy mouth. But if the mouth is unhealthy, it's going to create an unhealthy body as well.
Okay, so when you said if you have healthy microbes and you swallow, it goes down, you mean like that goes into your stomach or goes into your intestinal tract?
All the way through.
Okay, and then how about, and then you said if you have an unhealthy microbe, I guess you're swallowing that down too, but the effect is, instead of being like beneficial, that's becoming more systemic, that you swallowed that unhealthy bacteria?
It does both. It goes down into the intestinal tract and starts to repopulate that area. But the other thing that happens is that these microbes aren't specific to just staying in the intestinal tract. They can get anywhere in the body. And there are certain microbes they know that will just gravitate towards the heart. There's others that will go to the lungs and so forth. And so they eventually will get where the environment is ideal for them. And then they set up housekeeping and they start to populate the area. And the person just, their immune system has to work overtime trying to control this population.
Okay, so I'm thinking about when people get dental surgery, sometimes they're given antibiotics, and I think I hear, you know, protecting your heart. Is this because it's unleashing a lot of bacteria when you have dental surgery?
It is. And that's something that has changed over the years. We used to do that, especially with a certain population of people that had some heart issues and so forth. But it was done to protect the heart from having these microbial growths growing inside the heart. And they've stopped doing that because they realized that most of the microbes that caused that didn't really come from the mouth as much as it did from other areas. And also because the overuse of antibiotics just wasn't healthy. So the antibiotics are good to use when it's necessary for life-saving situations, but there really was a lot of overuse of antibiotics just because we thought it was a good idea to protect people.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, it's so interesting, Cindy. I feel like there's so much talk about the gut microbiome lately. It's like everyone's talking about it, but I don't hear anyone talking about how the bacteria in the mouth are going down into the gut. Isn't that funny?
Yes, and it's the mouth is connected to your intestinal tract.
It's the beginning of it, right?
It's the loading end, yes.
I mean, maybe that's implied when I hear those gut lectures, but everyone says gut, 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 and you just think of like, oh, way down deep in this bowels of myself is where that's yes. happening, but it's starting right in the mouth.
It's starting in the mouth, and the food that you eat feeds those microbes.
Yeah, so I want to get into how we can keep our mouth healthy, but could you give us a little more understanding about how our teeth get their nutrition, so to speak, or how they decay? Like what's feeding them and what's breaking them down?
That's a really great question, Bridget. Every single structure in the body is alive and vital. And it needs a food supply. So the teeth are very, very connected with this. We know that because we chew our food. So we have to chew our food to break it down into the smallest particles so that as it mixes with the saliva, it starts the digestive process. It goes down into the stomach and gets more things added to it, breaks it down even more. And then it starts going through our digestive tract. And through the small intestine, we start absorbing things. We break it down into the very smallest components and then start absorbing those things back into the body where it gets taken up through the blood supply and then distributed to every single cell in the body. And it comes back to the teeth through the blood supply that comes in through the tip of the roots. Now, in a normal situation, that's the way it works. It comes in through the mouth, it goes through the entire body, comes back through the blood, and then the nutrients come back out up through the center of the tooth, through that blood supply, and then there's a flow of fluid that goes out into the oral environment. And it's a liquid flow. It's not the blood brings the nutrients, but the blood stays in the blood vessel. So it's not like you're going to be leaking blood through your teeth. It's a flow of nutrients that comes from the inside out through the teeth. And when you have a healthy environment, that's the way it should flow, and that's very protective because it's constantly flushing out all those little tubules from the inside out. And something that was very interesting to me is that what I was taught was that when you have sugar, it feeds the microbes in the mouth, and then they create acid, and then the tooth starts to decay from the top down. And some research was done that was very interesting in that they showed that anytime you put sugar into the system, it reverses that whole flow, and especially to the teeth. So instead of it coming up, the nutrients coming in through the roots and up and out back into the oral environment and constantly flushing internally outward, it just sucked the microbes and everything else right into the tooth. And so the decay process actually happens underneath the surface and then kind of works its way up. So the thing that was so fascinating to me about this was the fact that when they were doing all this research, they found it took about an hour for that process to get reversed. And the animals that they used There was just a perfect parallel with the amount of sugar that was fed to them and the amount of decay that appeared on their teeth. And even when they fed them through feeding tubes in the stomach and didn't even put the sugar in their mouth. So, that tells me that the sugar may have an impact on the microbes, but the bigger impact is what it does to that whole system of flushing the teeth from the inside out versus sucking in the microbes and other things from the oral environment into the tooth. That really isn't the way our bodies were designed to work, and we've kind of messed it up because we've added so much sugar to our standard American diet.
So when you say sugar, does that just mean white sugar, or what else does that include?
Well, it's really difficult to get away from sugar because even things like fruits and vegetables have sugars in them, and we're pre-designed to want sugar because the sugar and the salt receptors on our tongue, taste buds, are right on the tip. And if you think about feeding babies mother's milk, it'll have a sweet taste to it, and that's what gets stimulated are those sweet taste buds. So sugar is in everything, including milk, whether it's mother's milk or cow's milk. There's going to be a sugar component to it, and there's sugar in almost everything except the proteins, I think, and the fats are the only things that don't have sugars in them. But the difference between the complex sugars, which are coming from our whole foods, fruits and vegetables, it comes with a lot of nutrition and fiber, and so your body has to work to release the sugar. It doesn't just dump into your system and get absorbed immediately. And the processed foods and the table sugars and sweets and honeys and things like that, even if they're a better source of sugar, they still get right into the system rapidly. And they come with no vitamins or minerals or nutrients of any sort. So there's a completely different approach to it and how fast it gets into your system.
Okay, that makes sense. So there's just obviously a difference in quality. 'Cause yeah, you said earlier your mouth is this warm, dark place with lots of food coming in, and that's a good home for microbes. I thought, well, yeah, of course it is. How could it be anything else? So
It's
yeah.
Club Med.
Yeah, that's the environment. So let's get into taking care of our mouth. So I think most of us as children just learn about brushing and flossing, and maybe doing some fluoride rinse or something. So, is brushing and flossing enough? Is it helpful? And what else do we need to know?
Well, the first thing we need to know is that it is a very important aspect. There's just no doubt about that because in an ideal world, we wouldn't need to, but we don't have an ideal world. And so we have to do everything in our power to stay healthy. And helping to control those microbes, one of the best ways to do it is to get in and stir up what's going on in the mouth, so that they can be spit out or disrupted in some way so that they can't set up housekeeping and make little colonies on your teeth. So it is important to do the brushing and flossing, and everybody that's gone to the dentist has gotten great instruction on the proper ways to do that. There's no doubt about that. The other thing is to feed yourself properly, and I don't know if you want me to get into that now or later.
Yeah, maybe you can just kind of give, I mean, people who listen to this podcast are pretty knowledgeable about nutrition, but maybe you can give some of your key points on what you think is good nutrition for the mouth.
Well, what's good nutrition for the mouth is also what's good nutrition for the entire body. And Mother Nature just knows best. So if you look at the foods, if you think of doing your shopping in the Garden of Eden, what would you have found? You wouldn't have found Twinkies or Oreos or chips or anything like that. You would have found real food, which are fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and that's what we would have eaten. So those are the kinds of foods that cause our body, they break down to a slightly alkaline environment. Even if you're eating something like a citrus fruit that we think of as being acidic, it's going to end up being alkaline in the body, which is going to neutralize any acidity. if you're eating foods like the processed foods, most anything that comes with a wrapper and a label is considered a processed food.
Okay.
It's been adulterated in some way, and things are added to it. The chemicals and things that get added to it for preservatives cause the body to be more acidic, as well as the fact that there's added sugars in most of them, and they break down really rapidly into sugar because the fibers and things have been processed out of them. And so anything that's going to be a sugar, an animal protein, or a processed food breaks down to be more acidic. So it's being more acidic is what changes the oral environment with the microbes, because there's a different type of microbes that exist in that acidic environment than when you're eating a diet that's heavy on plant foods, especially the green plant foods.
Yeah, very alkalizing.
Very, very alkalizing, and that's really important. And it's not to say that we can't have those other foods. It's to say that if you've been predominantly high on those other foods, it's important to kind of put them aside for a while and get really high on the alkalinizing foods, and then use them to balance each other. Once you can reestablish that alkaline environment within your body, then you just want to remember that if you're going to eat some of these other foods, balance them with the fruits and vegetables, and especially the green ones.
Okay, so if you're having animal protein, obviously you want high quality, and then having it with greens or quinoa or things that are alkalizing and whole foods.
Yes. Yeah,
Okay.
it's whole food. And the other thing is, it's important to eat what is grown in your area during the season it's grown.
Yeah,
David
summer.
Wolf is yeah, David Wolf is the raw food guru out there. That's, he's pretty well known, but he made a very profound statement in my mind when he said, well, if God was going to provide us with a food supply, what are the odds he would have put it right at our feet? It's like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's if you live in the tropics, you find foods that are going to be more cooling foods, but you won't find root vegetables and the foods that we in the Northwest get during the wintertime, the winter squashes and that type of thing. So nature provides for us a good food supply for the area that we live in.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think about that sometimes. Like, what did people eat in Oregon 150 years ago and in the winter or the summer? And, now summer's bounty is kicking in. And yeah, I just think about in the winter, okay, there'd be a root cellar, they'd slaughter an animal. And it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's exactly what they did. And there's an Ayurvedic philosophy that how you feed yourself in this season is preparing you for a healthy next season.
Yeah, that makes sense too. So I had one follow-up question about the brushing and flossing. When we are disrupting and moving the bacteria, that makes sense. But then I would imagine we're also spitting out good bacteria. How does that factor in?
You're going to be spitting out a lot of microbes, but there are so many millions in your mouth, you're never going to get rid of all of them. And the big thing to remember is that the way the microbes reproduce is that they're a single cell organism. And when they reproduce, the cell gets large and then all of a sudden it breaks off, and now you have two. And then each of those matures and they split. So you go from two to four to eight, and you start getting this exponential growth. Well, two to four to eight is pretty small numbers, but you get a couple million going to 2 million to 4 million, you can see that changes things quite a bit. So even if you can't see that you're removing anything, you're removing a lot of microbes just by getting in there and stirring things up and spitting them out. And then this it's a good time to work in oil pulling if you'd like to.
What was I going to ask you? Oh, so I would say that it's just kind of resetting the playing field to just reduce the overall load. And then maybe if you were maybe teetering on the edge of having too much negative bacteria, now you've taken a whole bunch out and maybe now the balance can be reset. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's exactly what it does, and that's
Okay.
why it's important to be brushing and flossing and doing your routine home care every day without fail. Oftentimes people think if they don't floss today, they're just going to have twice as much plaque tomorrow.
Okay.
But when you factor in that exponential growth, they might have way more.
Okay.
It's not just twice as much.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. So it really multiplies. And yeah, I'd love for you to talk about oil pulling, and I'm going to ask you about some other specific techniques too.
Okay. So oil pulling is something that is an Ayurvedic practice that they've been doing for thousands of years. And in India, they used the sesame seed oil. I don't know that it matters really which oil you use, but I prefer using the coconut oil because I find it's just easier. It has, you know, a fairly low melting point. And if it's solid, I just put a cup in the microwave and heat the water up and then stick a little dish on top of it with a spoonful of coconut oil, and it just melts very rapidly. I tend not to let it melt in my mouth that way because I really like coconut oil. And it's really hard for me not to swallow it as it's melting, just because it tastes good. So it's easier for me to get it in a liquid form and start swishing it. And the idea is to do it first thing in the morning before you eat or drink anything. You put the spoonful of coconut oil in your mouth, and coconut oil tastes good. It's also antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral. And what you're doing is just swishing it in your mouth. So you can put the oil in and you can go in and hop in the shower, start your morning grooming process, as long as you're not brushing your teeth. And you just keep swishing this stuff in the oil in your mouth. And what it does is it starts to break down the microbial cells. It allows the oil to penetrate and it starts to absorb the microbes and so forth. And you start flushing them out of your system, and you just have to spit the oil out after about 15, 20 minutes or so, being careful not to put it down the drain because it will solidify again and clog your drain. So you always want to put it into the garbage rather than down the drain. Mm-hmm. But what people have found when they do this, there's just a lot of benefits, and there are a lot of people that have started doing it, go into the dental office and they go, wow, you had a really good checkup. You know, this, your gums look really healthy. What's different? Well, I've been oil pulling. So the other thing that happens is that there are all these microbes that we mentioned earlier that have an affinity for other places in the body. So if you can get all those out first thing in the morning before you start to swallow, because overnight things are pretty quiet in your mouth and it's a great opportunity for the microbes to grow without other things interfering in the process. So you get them out of your system, and people find, one of the things they find is that they may find their sinus improves. Mm-hmm. If they're, you know, Pacific Northwest postnasal drip and sinus problems are just kind of, they go hand in hand for many people. But a lot of people find that it improves that, and it sometimes will improve the texture and quality of your skin. Your mouth tastes fresher. Sores in your mouth will heal up faster from the coconut oil. There's just a lot of benefits that happen away from the mouth simply because all those microbes aren't getting into the body.
Yeah, I think I read that in your book, and I was just so fascinated that, you know, rinsing out the mouth could help with things like, you know, stuffy nose or skin problems. It's really cool, and I think most people wouldn't put those two things together.
Well, the body is just connected to every part of the mouth is connected to every part of the body, and vice versa.
Yeah. So I have a question about oil pulling. Like, I've tried it, and I just find that after a couple minutes, I just, you know, I'm not used to having something in my mouth that long, and I just want to spit it out. I've never lasted more than a couple minutes. Do you have any tips on how to get used to it?
Yes, I think probably, I don't know how much oil you were using. I find it works better for me if I don't use a large amount of oil.
Oh, okay.
Because when it, and especially with something like coconut oil, the flavor of it is, it'll cause you to salivate. So sometimes what happens is that your mouth feels like it's too full and you just can't deal with this anymore. Just spit it out and start with another spoonful. And if you just keep keep going. I just, when I do it, I keep a little small dish with me so that if I feel like I'm going to sneeze or cough or something, I can just get rid of it really quickly in this little dish, and then it's easy to dispense it into the garbage from there. Just wipe it out with a paper towel. But if you don't, you can build up to doing about 15 minutes, and it's just like any habit. It just takes time and working around the obstacles.
Okay, so what would you say is the right amount to start out with, would you guess?
I would start with a teaspoon, and for an adult.
Okay, a teaspoon. Okay, yeah, I do think I remember kind of feeling like I was salivating or like foaming up, and I was like, ugh. But
Yeah,
I'll try again because it sounds like it's so helpful. That's really cool. Okay, and you also mentioned a few other things that people may have heard of in the book. Tell us about xylitol.
Well, xylitol is a sugar substitute, and what they found is that the microbes in the mouth will use it, and then it messes up their digestive system and eliminates them because it just wreaks havoc with them. So one of the things that they found is that it's very effective to, if you take like 5 doses a day of xylitol, which can be sucking on a like Spry is a great brand, the mints after
Okay.
every meal, and then using their gum between meals twice a day,
Okay.
and just chewing it for about 5 minutes or so, and just letting this xylitol, and it's important to do this 5 times a day, morning, noon, and night, and then in between meals, so that you catch all those microbes as they reproduce and a new crop of them comes up. So you're constantly controlling it, and it's very good against the microbes that cause decay. And you can repopulate your mouth by getting rid of the ones that cause decay in this manner. It was something that they found was very, very helpful with expectant mothers because the type of microbes that the mother has will get transferred over to the child. It's like we can't help kissing our babies, right? They used to refer
Okay.
to kissing as swapping spit. Well, there's more fact than fiction in that. And we inoculate the child's mouth with whatever is in the mouth of the primary caregiver. And so if the mother, while she's pregnant, goes on this regimen, it's a very simple thing to do. It's just remembering to do it 5 times a day, but mint after every meal and chewing gum in between is the easiest way to do it. And it needs to continue on for a month or two. And what they found is that it really helped reduce the mother's decay rate. And then there was a 5-year residual effect in the infant when it was born. And they also found that these infants whose mothers had gone on this regimen, had fewer problems with ears. So they were finding it wasn't necessary to deal with the earaches and the tubes and all those things, simply because they repopulated the oral environment with a different type of bacteria.
Okay, so it sounds like the 5-time-a-day thing is important. How about if you put xylitol like as a sweetener in your tea or something? Does that still help?
Yes, it does. And the thing to remember is that you can have some intestinal distress if you try to replace sugar in your cookies with xylitol.
Oh, I've never had
So
that problem.
small doses works best, and it just depends on the individuals too. But
Okay. Is it a bit of a laxative or something?
well, yeah, you can get some kind of intestinal upset. I've never tried it myself. I just try to eliminate sugar as much as possible and try not to allow myself to eat the sweets because sugar is very addictive, and I've certainly gone down that road many times trying to get myself off of sugar again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
That's
but
interesting.
you can use it in your tea.
And what do you think about like the xylitol toothpaste? What do you use when you brush your teeth? Do you use a powder or a paste or?
I use a couple different products. For many years, I didn't use anything. When I was in dental hygiene school, they said that the toothpaste really just gave you a fluoride treatment and gave you some breath freshening stuff, and it did the foaming, and it made you feel like you were really cleaning your mouth. But it was the physical action of the brushing and the flossing that removed the plaque. Well, I'm somebody that always found that whatever ingredients were in toothpaste caused my oral tissues to burn. And so I always used just a very, very tiny amount of toothpaste. And when I found out it wasn't even necessary, I quit using it altogether. So for many years, I didn't even use any toothpaste. You can use baking soda and salt. You know, it's not going to harm you to do that. That the baking soda actually helps alkalinize the oral environment. Some people brush with coconut oil. There's a lot of different toothpaste out there. But one of the things that I like to do is to find a toothpaste that doesn't have sodium lauryl sulfate in it and also doesn't have the little plastic beads that some of them are, they're starting to find that are there in the toothpaste for some silly reason. I guess to clean the teeth better. And
Oh.
yeah, we don't need those.
No.
And sodium lauryl sulfate, oh, the fluoride. You know,
Okay.
I choose to control the microbes with the xylitol and do some other things rather than using the fluoride.
I think we should kind of drive this point home. So, let me just ask you, do you think it's possible to have a healthy mouth and strong teeth without using fluoride?
I do believe it is.
Okay.
I do believe it is. It takes some effort and it takes a more holistic approach to your own self-care. The thing that fluoride does is harden the teeth so that it takes more sugar to break it down. And that was the philosophy behind using fluoride to prevent decay. Well, I think that there's other things that we can use, such as the xylitol, and now we have something called MI paste that you can get from the dentist, which is calcium and phosphorus that actually goes in and starts to remineralize the tooth when that decay process is just beginning. So I think there's other things that we can do to prevent the decay without using the fluoride and the xylitol and the MI paste and oil pulling and those types of things are not really going to be harmful to you if you swallow them accidentally, but toothpaste is.
Because of
And
the
it's usually
fluoride.
because of the fluoride,
Okay.
right?
Okay. Yeah, and doesn't some fluoride sort of absorb through your mouth, or do you have to swallow it?
I think you have the opportunity to absorb anything through your mouth because of the oral mucosa. You know, they do a lot of sublingual patches or drops for nitro patches and, you know, different things like that. So you do absorb through the mouth.
Okay.
You know, it's a direct route into the bloodstream without going through the stomach, just directly into the system. So I firmly believe in reducing the amount of toxins that you put into your body. And if there's a safer way to do it, why not?
I think another point to bring up here is we're not just taking fluoride out and leaving everything else the same, right? We're saying you're eating better, you're avoiding sugars, you're oil pulling, you're using xylitol 5 times a day. So I don't want to give people the idea, well, just drop fluoride and everything's
That's absolutely right.
okay.
That is absolutely right. It's all of these things collectively make a huge difference.
Okay. And you brought up the MI paste, which I have been given by a dentist before, but I don't know. I think my variety of MI paste might have fluoride in it. Are there some that have it?
You know, I really can't give you
You're not sure.
an answer on that because the one that I have doesn't.
Okay, yours is just calcium and phosphorus.
Yes, mine is just calcium and phosphorus.
Okay, I'm going to look that up because I'm a little bit curious. Because that was my only. I do have some, and I like the idea of kind of hardening my teeth or mineralizing them. So, yeah, it's
Well,
something. Go ahead.
yes, and the other thing about the MI paste is that if you swallow it, it's not going to hurt you. It's just calcium and phosphorus.
Okay, so that's something our listeners could ask their dentist about. Is that right?
Yes, and that's usually where you have to get it is through the dental office.
Okay.
But it's a great product. You just brush and floss your teeth and then put like a pea-sized amount on your finger and then just smear it around on your teeth and, you know, mush it around and swish it and just let it make complete contact with your teeth and you can swallow it. It's not going to hurt you.
Okay. And then maybe last one I wanted to talk about was Waterpik, which I feel like maybe used to be more popular. I don't see many people using Waterpik anymore. Can you tell us about those?
Yes, I'm really a fan of Waterpiks. back in the day when I was in school, the Waterpiks were just coming out, and they were saying, "Oh, it makes your mouth feel so fresh," and but beware because the plaque is still there. Well, the plaque may be still attached to the tooth, but the plaque, the microbes that haven't attached into the plaque yet are usually the ones that are in the gum tissue underneath the gum tissue between this in the space between the tooth and the gums, and that's where you get into the more pathogenic microbes that cause gum irritation. And so if you take that water pick and you just go around your mouth with it, it makes a little siphon that pulls all those little microbes out of those pockets, and you can remove them.
So does it like squirt out water and then suck in things too? Is
No, it's like a little pulsing stream of water. It's a small stream of water, and it comes out under pressure, and so it's kind of stimulating to the tissue. And you just run it around just above the gum line, holding it at a 90-degree angle, and you just start at one side and do just the outside surfaces of your teeth. You don't have to do it on the inside, and it just squirts that water. And it's most people, when they start using a water pick, are absolutely amazed that they've already brushed and flossed their teeth, and they'll find bits and pieces of food and debris that come out with the water pick that they didn't even know were still there.
Ugh. Okay, so you just spit it out after you use the water pick. Okay,
You do.
interesting. I might look around for one of those. So the thing I wanted to close on was the mama baby connection between the microbiome and the mouth development. And you spoke up on it a bit about kissing and how that transfers bacteria and builds the baby's bacteria. But tell us about some other ways that the baby's mouth develops.
The microbiome, one of the ways that it develops is through the vaginal birth, because whatever microbes are inhabiting the mother's body will get inoculated into the baby's mouth as they pass through the birth canal. So that's one way that it gets set up. It will automatically get set up just through the process of life. It takes a lot longer for that normal biome to get established, if it wasn't a vaginal birth. It doesn't mean that it won't get established, it just takes longer. So the other thing is it has to do with the type of foods that we're eating, and which again goes back to the type of foods that the microbes that are supposed to be there, like are the fruits and vegetables. The whole
Okay.
foods, so those are things that help establish it. A lot of the microbes that the way it gets inoculated is actually off of the fresh produce. But another way that they used to do it had to do with the fermented foods, and every culture had some form of a fermented food that was a probiotic, and it inoculates the mouth. Sauerkraut is a great one, as long as it wasn't heat processed. We see a lot of that being advertised on TV about the yogurts that have the live cultures and so forth. There's just a lot of fermented foods out there that, if they're naturally fermented, will have these probiotics. And every time you eat them, you're not only inoculating your intestinal tract, you're inoculating the mouth at the same time.
Okay, so going back to the basics, if you're thinking of getting pregnant, you're pregnant, you're nursing, just eating a variety of fruits and vegetables, eating fermented foods, eating alkalizing things will just keep your microbiome happier, and then you're transferring that health to the baby.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's really awesome. And you talked a little bit about to me earlier about the jaw and breastfeeding. Can you talk about the baby's mouth development with breastfeeding?
Yes, one of the things that over time we kind of got away from it being just an accepted practice to just breastfeed our children. And it's nature's perfect way of, it's the perfect food, it's the perfect delivery system for the formation of the jaw. As our whole society changed and mothers went out of the home and into the workplace, that became more and more difficult, and it really kind of got pushed to the back burner in favor of convenience of bottle feeding and formulas and so forth. But one of the things that they know is that if you're able to breastfeed your baby, the action of the baby's tongue is always kind of an outward pushing, which pushes against both the upper and the lower jaw and helps the formation of the jaw, which continues to grow for about 2 years after the child is born. It takes about that long. And that's about how long indigenous cultures would breastfeed their children. It was about 2 years. And so it's that constant outward pressure that's helping the bone. It stimulates the bone to more perfectly round out the arches so that there's room for all the teeth. Okay. The other thing is that if it's a bottle, if the baby is completely bottle fed, the action is just the opposite. It's sucking. And so it's pulling the jaws in, or it's an inward pressure on the bone rather than an outward pressure. So it definitely has a beneficial impact on the structure of the child and the growth and development of their jaw if the mother does have the ability to breastfeed her child.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Now tooth crowding is a much bigger problem in our modern culture. And I know you've probably studied Western A. Price.
Oh, yeah.
Who said, you know, this tooth crowding was never a problem in traditional cultures. And yeah, it really makes sense that they were breastfeeding longer and they had these nice kind of wide jaws. So, wow, you just put two and two together for me there. Thank you.
Well, yes. And anybody that's interested in looking into the Western Price Foundation, it's great dental research, and it's amazing. He did some great work. It's just unfortunate that his work didn't quite make the mainstream. So, but I think there is a resurgence of it, and people are starting to become more aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty famous guy in a way in a lot of our circles. So his work definitely is still getting out there, and people are still buying his book, and so. Yeah, yes. It's good. Yeah. Like you said, from the bottom up, we'll make the change.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing to keep in mind when you look into Weston Price's material is that he found each generation that these indigenous populations were away from their indigenous diet, certain things started showing up in the mouth. And initially, when they had no exposure to the outside world and they just ate their pristine indigenous diet that was right there at their feet at the time, they had very healthy mouths. They didn't have oral disease, and it was just amazing. But they also didn't do any brushing or flossing. Then when they started bringing in dental care as well as a change in diet with these exposure to the outside world and our processed foods, that whole system changed. So changing the diet and even having the dental care that they didn't previously had, they couldn't keep the cavities under control.
Yeah.
And the first generation off of the indigenous diet, they found rampant caries or cavities. The second generation, you started seeing changes in the facial structure and the width of the jaw. So, it's in an ideal world, if we could go back to the diet those indigenous people had, we'd all be better off, but what are the chances that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of people listening who are trying, and it's challenging with how much our world has changed, but it's nice to see the interest. And I know for me, the more I learn, the more excited I am to make changes in my diet or stick to it or say no to things, say no to that piece of cake and like try to eat liver. And, when I learn about it, I'm like, wow. So I think this, all this education that we're doing today is just super important for inspiring. So yeah, thank you so much for all this great content.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I enjoyed it and hope your listeners got some useful information.
I'm sure they did. Yeah, this is the longest show I've done in a while, but we had a lot to cover. I had a lot of questions, so we did it. So let us know how people can find your book, how people can find out more about you. And then I know you said you did some continuing education in the dental field. Maybe some people would like to know more about that.
Mostly the dental education stuff will be posted on the website I have for that was designed for dental people, which is integrativedentalconcepts.com.
Okay.
The other website I have is where they can purchase the book, and that's Universal Health Northwest, and it's NW for Northwest.
Universal Health Northwest.
Yeah, Universal Health NW.
Okay.
And that's the place to purchase the book.
Perfect. Yeah, if you want a little bit, if you know some of these ideas sounded really good to you, but you'd like it, you know, to kind of see it written down so you can try some more stuff at home, pick up the book. It's called Over the Lips and Through the Gums, A Holistic Guide to a Healthy Mouth. Well, thanks again, Cindy, and thanks for everyone for listening. If you stayed tuned this whole time, then you got all the practical stuff at the end. So thanks for staying tuned. And we will be back next week with another great guest. And always, you can forward these show links to friends if you want them to know about it. You know, post it on your social media. The best way to stay tuned to the show is to be subscribed, and you can subscribe on iTunes or any podcast player. You can also become a fan under Blog Talk Radio, and you'll be notified of every new show. And we always appreciate your ratings on iTunes. Appreciate that very much. And any comments or suggestions you have for the show, you can use our contact form at bridgetdanner.com. And there you can find out a little bit more about my work and get some free goodies as well. So until next week, thanks everybody.